House will come to order. Clerk will open the voting system to determine the presence of a quorum. Representative Conger. Conger's here. Representative Tomei. Representative Gelser. Representative Gelser. Representative Wingard. Representative Hoyle. Representative Wingard, Hoyle. Sheehan. Representative Sheehan. Quorum is present.
Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform the Senate to pass Senate Bills 1581, 1582, and 1579.
Chair requests unanimous consent to advance to the order of first reading of Senate bills. Clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 1579, related to State Financial Administration and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 1581, related to Education and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 1582, related to the state, to the Department of State Lands.
Bills read first time or passed to the co-speakers for referral. Chair requests unanimous consent to advance to the order of second reading of Senate bills. Without objection, so ordered. Clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 1552, relating to foreclosures of residential trust deeds, appropriating money, and declaring an emergency.
Bill read second time, has passed to third reading. Chair requests unanimous consent to advance to the order of third reading of Senate bills. Without objection, so ordered. Chair requests unanimous consent the rules be suspended and Senate Bill 1552 be read third time immediately. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 1552, relating to foreclosures of residential trust deeds, appropriating money, and declaring an emergency.
Question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 1552. Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 1552 is a bill that helps Oregonians who are struggling with the foreclosure process. This bill has been a long time coming. It's been in this chamber for at least 3 years, the discussions of this. And I'm really proud to bring this to the floor and really appreciate all the work that has gone into trying to get something that does help Oregonians. Colleagues, Senate Bill 1552 does a couple of really common sense things. The first thing it does is it tells the homeowner that you should talk to a housing counselor. This process comes, if I am not mistaken, 60 days ahead of the notice for foreclosure sale. So there's a notice that goes out that says you should talk to somebody, a housing counselor that's recognized by HUD, not just somebody, but somebody who is recognized by HUD, about the process of foreclosure and whether or not you have some way to avoid the process of foreclosure. Maybe there's something can be done. So once you accomplish that, or if you cannot get an appointment to have that consultation within 30 days, you can go and have mediation face-to-face with the lender or the loan servicer or the agent of that lender. Colleagues, there's also a provision in there that does allow the lender under certain circumstances to participate by some other method beyond face-to-face. But generally, it is preferred that that meeting happens face-to-face. At that point in time, that process goes forward, and it is decided by the beneficiary, the lender, whether or not you actually qualify for a loan modification. There might be a short sale or some other sort of avoidance of the foreclosure process. While that is happening, we have rolled Senate Bill 1564 into this bill, which is the dual track issue, which just briefly is the case where a borrower who is facing foreclosure underwater goes into a negotiation to find out whether they can actually qualify for some process to avoid foreclosure. While that's happening, the foreclosure process cannot proceed at the same time. So that's a huge, huge development in this, something that's going to help Oregonians. The foreclosure process isn't changed. It still takes 120 days for the foreclosure process. With that advance notification of the mediation in front of 60 days, in reality, the borrower, the consumer, the homeowner has 180 days to work this out. Hopefully, this will help, and it has proven in 21 other states that it does help for some folks to avoid foreclosure. The bill also provides some oversight by the Attorney General to draft rules and to oversee the foreclosure mediation program. It does also require that the banks, when they have somebody mediating, that they actually have the authority to negotiate. And there's a set of notices that are also required throughout this bill. One of the important pieces of this legislation is, in fact, that the foreclosure sale cannot proceed unless the mediation has been completed or there has been a determination that the homeowner is not eligible for some sort of foreclosure avoidance. And once that happens, then the foreclosure sale is then, a notice of that is then scheduled for 30 days after that completion of the process. Colleagues, this is really a common sense approach to this issue. We have over 40,000 Oregonians who are either underwater in their mortgages or in the foreclosure process. And if we can help mitigate some of those foreclosures, 20%, 50% has been proven in some other states. We're going to help stabilize the housing and the real estate markets by trying to keep some of these foreclosures from happening. Because as we all know, when we have foreclosures in our neighborhoods, there's a lot of things that happen. The values of the neighborhood go down, makes it harder for folks to get loans to refinance because the values keep dropping. This is really a monumental effort by this legislature to come up with something that helps Oregonians. I think Oregonians have been heard by this legislature about foreclosure and the problems they're having when they can't even identify who the lender is, who they should talk to. They can't find somebody to talk to. This bill is going to ensure that that happens. There's been a lot of back and forth on this bill, some compromise, some common sense negotiations that have led to this B in gross version. Colleagues, I think now is the time for us to act as a body for Oregonians and provide them a little help in this process, because it's a complicated process and they are usually disadvantaged going into this. Anybody that's in foreclosure usually doesn't have a lot of cash on hand to to pursue litigation. And that's really not the right way to avoid foreclosure. What we need is we need a conversation with the lenders to actually say, what can I do to get out from underneath this problem? Is there something I can do to avoid foreclosure? Oftentimes that won't be the case. That's acknowledged in this bill. But all in all, I think this is a great piece of legislation that will help Oregon, Oregon homeowners who are facing crisis. It will help our economy. It will help stabilize the real estate market. Colleagues, I urge an aye vote to this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Co-carrier Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And honorable colleagues, my friend from the Empire State City did a great job. But let me add a little bit. The Senate bill, the amended Senate bill 1552 does provide mediation, increased counseling, and a dual-track solution. The new Senate bill 1552 is a bipartisan, bi-chamber compromise to help Oregon homeowners stay in their homes. Colleagues, the amendments to Senate bill 1552 were the work of the good representative from Troutdale. His expertise in this area and his hard work and ability to explain to lay people like me the reasons for the amendments produced this compromise bill. Also, the good representative from LO, Lake Oswego, also helped explain the legal processes we need to have, we needed, and to also to avoid any changes to this bill. It's already been explained that this, what the bill does provide for foreclosure protection, mandatory face-to-face meetings, third-party mediator. And before mediation, homeowners will meet with a housing HUD-certified counselor from Oregon Housing and Community Services to discuss the options available to the homeowner. This bill is a result of the art of negotiation with compromise. The bill is not the bill that was read in this House 2 weeks ago. We are approving a bill with the Dash 22 and Dash 25 amendments. Hopefully, the Emerald Empire, will evaluate this policy in our General Government Consumer Protection Committee with inputs from public and private entities impacted by this bill to see if action is required in 2013 to deliver the intended help to distressed homeowners. Colleagues, I urge your yes vote for Senate Bill 1552 amended.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, as we heard earlier, 3 years, this bill has been a long time coming. But this bill is more a reaction to a bigger problem that we're facing. Because banks don't want to be foreclosing on people. They don't want to be in these situations. The people that are in these situations don't want to be in the situations. Problem is, the things we should have been acting on 3 years ago, besides this bill, is the fact that we should have been acting on creating jobs and doing things to make Oregon a business-friendly environment for businesses to locate here and start creating jobs. Because the biggest thing that would solve these problems are people being able to work and make money so they can make their house payments. This session, I would like to say that we're getting to the root of the problem, but no, we have a Band-Aid fix to help people that are going into foreclosure. We had an opportunity with House Bill 4097 that would have created 18,563 jobs, but that bill never made it here, and we did nothing with it. We also had our water bill, which nothing ever came with that, and it would have created 10,250 jobs. But one bill that was successful was expanding Oregon's enterprise zones, but we amended it so it wouldn't create 8,100 jobs. We amended it down to 6,125 jobs. We had House Bill 4103 for our building and construction industry. That bill did not make it to this floor either. We had House Bill 4098, House Bill 4076, and House Bill 4096 as well. These were all bills that would have helped Oregonians get back to work so they could make their house payments and would not be in the situation they're in right now. Colleagues, we're helping the people out that are in a very bad situation, and I support this bill. But there should have been many more bills that we should have been supportive of and got across this House floor so we could have put people back to work. So while we're doing a little things, Band-Aid fixes, we missed the big ticket items that would make Oregon a successful place, and we would be able to fund our schools and our education system with the money we need to, with taxpayers paying into the system. But unfortunately, we chose not to. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Doherty.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
First of all, I'd like to thank all of the people that worked very hard on this negotiations, because I know it was a very tough situation to deal with, and I think you came up with a solution. I've been waiting to read this since February 29th, and of course, none of us are ever home, so we never get to see our neighbors. But I got this email from my neighbor, Barbara, down the street, who happens to live in the house on my street that was foreclosed on 2 years ago. And in the email, she says, I hope the legislature will find a way to help homeowners. Karen, my daughter in Wisconsin's home, was scheduled for a sheriff's sale on March 1st. With the help of a mediator, they were able to meet with the bank on Monday. The bank negotiated with them, and they were able to avoid the foreclosure. They wrote a new loan, which brought their monthly payment down considerably. I'm so grateful that they were not able to lose their home. Hopefully, this will be able to happen in Oregon, and I think it did. So thank you very much. I urge a yes vote.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion, Representative Wand.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I'm always mindful of a phrase that I've heard a couple of times. What is right is not always expedient, and what is expedient is not always right. You know, in my day job, I'm an attorney, but I like to think of it as a counselor at law. Because people come to me with their problems, and they don't look at me as a professional or as an attorney. They look at me as a person who explains to them what is going on, that explains to them whether I can help them, and they trust that I'm giving them proper advice. When I saw this bill from the Senate side, when I saw the numbers that 85% of the homeowners facing foreclosure in Nevada had not asked for mediation, I knew that I had to act. I knew that it wasn't good enough that I'm one of the newer members and that there are people that are very intelligent around me and people that are on the other side of this building that are also very intelligent. I knew that I had a particular opportunity to stand up for a principle that I believe strongly in, which is the concept of counseling. Because, colleagues, mediation alone doesn't do our neighbors any good. At the end of the day, if they are thrown into a room with a mediator, if they are thrown into a room with a multi-billion dollar bank, how on earth are they going to know what can be done to help them? And that is why I stood so firmly demanding, asking, cajoling, suggesting that this counseling element be included in this bill. Because that is the key, colleagues. Having the opportunity for a borrower, for an Oregonian, for our neighbor to know what the likely and possible outcomes of a mediation are, that's the difference. You know, I've had two instances that were very striking with regard to foreclosure. In one instance, I was representing a elderly couple who had a farm that had taken a mortgage because they knew that their property was going to be rezoned. It was in a comprehensive plan. And that comprehensive plan never came to fruition. And they contacted me and called me weekly as the foreclosure date was coming due. And I had long since stopped charging them anything. And then as we got about 2 weeks before the date, they called me two or three times a day. And the lady, the wife, was telling me, I just know my husband is going to die if we lose this farm. That struck a very deep chord with me, and it was heartbreaking when I was not able to save their farm. Luckily, he's still alive. But there's another instance where I had a success, and I want to talk about that too. The husband was a construction worker, and he had a disaster where a piece of equipment fell on top of his truck, and he was out of business. And they came to my law firm asking for help facing a foreclosure, and my partner was able to help them save their home. And these are dear friends of mine. Their kids go to school with my kids, and the relief in their eyes is a driving force for me on this. I'm proud of the work that we were able to accomplish with the people in this body and on the other side of the building. We've removed the obligation in all instances for $200 payments that these folks can't afford. We have proper notices that will help, and we have a counseling option that will provide the necessary background so that people going into mediation have a realistic shot of success. This is not the perfect solution, but the one thing that I promised my neighbors when I came here is that I would not let perfect be an enemy of good. And so I'm very excited to have this bill. I ask for your aye vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion, Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, as you might expect, I urge an aye vote on this bill, not because it's sufficient. It's not. Too many of our neighbors are in desperate circumstances, in danger of losing their homes, and not due to the extravagance or profligacy or even poor planning, simply due to others having used them to build an economy into a house of cards. It is, however, vitally necessary. And this is why we are here, certainly why I am here. It is one of those times when, in order to make life better for our constituents, we first have to make it less hard. I'm tremendously relieved that we're able to enact these common sense measures, and I will get over my disappointment that it took so long and had to be so hard. I can't understand that, but I guess I'll just have to move on. I know that some in this chamber had a hard time with this, and I want to offer my sincere thanks for coming around. My neighborhood needs it. Our neighborhood, your neighborhood needs it. Oregon needs it. This is a bill, an excellent bill. It should definitely pass, and I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion, Representative Lindsay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, there are two types of foreclosure statutes here in Oregon. One is called non-judicial foreclosure, and one is called judicial foreclosure. This bill addresses only non-judicial foreclosure. Non-judicial foreclosure means that private parties agree to a foreclosure system where they do not involve the courts. Judicial foreclosure is where the courts are involved. This bill does not address judicial foreclosure at all. My concern is that with this compromise, the non-judicial foreclosure system has become incredibly complex. And consequently, what will happen is that banks, including small banks and, yes, credit unions, will forego and not pursue the non-judicial foreclosure route. They will in turn go to the judicial foreclosure route. And what that means is that in every single foreclosure in this state, the courts will be involved, number one. And number two, borrowers can have a judgment entered against them in 30 days. A couple weeks ago, I shared a story about my sister who went through foreclosure. I told you that she worked with the bank 18 months to work out that foreclosure. I'm afraid that under this new system, or under this new complex non-judicial foreclosure route, that in her circumstance, the bank will for future purposes, choose the judicial foreclosure route. And if under her circumstances, if she was the banks were faced with what this new system will be, instead of 18 months, my sister would have only had 30 days to have a judgment of foreclosure entered against her. I'm gravely concerned about that. I hope I'm wrong, but I'm gravely concerned about that. I really am concerned that we're running around with fire extinguishers in times of flood. I hope I'm wrong.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Juan, for what purpose are you in the queue?
State a conflict of interest.
State your potential conflict.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I own a law firm that represents both homeowners and a community bank that will be impacted by the legislation.
Potential conflict, so noted. Further discussion? Representative Conger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I need to disclose a potential conflict, I think.
Representative, and for those of you who practice law, a determination has been made that a conflict, potential conflict declaration among a class so large is not particularly necessary. You're free to do so if you choose. It's not deemed necessary.
Just a question then, Mr. Speaker, is when you say a class so large, are you referring to banks? Trying to be difficult.
Hold on. No, sir. I was specifically referring to those who represent people who are in litigation, i.e. the attorney class, which is a group fairly large.
Understood. Out of an abundance of caution, I will declare a potential conflict.
State your potential conflict.
My law firm represents a number of banks, both community banks and national banks, that may be affected by this legislation.
Potential conflict, so noted. Further discussion? Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, the hour is late, but I feel compelled because I think there are Oregonians watching tonight, people who have come to this Capitol day after day during the course of this 35-day session to tell us about the one thing that really mattered to them, which is giving them help in the foreclosure process. You know, we had bills from the Senate last session that we were unable to pass on this floor. And I want to thank the folks on the Senate side who worked very hard in the interim to come up with the two bills that we had to be able to consider on this floor, Senate Bill 1552 and 1564. I want to make sure that the Oregonians who are listening tonight, who are dealing with foreclosure themselves, know that their voices and their stories have not been in vain. And while those who are in the middle of the process right now might not be helped right now, but the folks going forward, the folks who are in crisis now, who are distressed homeowners who might be facing foreclosure in the near future, will be helped by the passage of this bill tonight. I want to be sure that we understand that the complexity that has been expressed that we are somehow adding to this process is long overdue. It is not extra complexity. What it is additional assistance for the individuals who want one thing and one thing only. They want to speak face to face with their lender. They want to sit down with someone, with a third party mediator, and talk about their situation. We are here today because of this legislation because those folks have not been able to sit down with their lender. That is not additional complexity. That is justice for the folks who really just want to have someone talk to them. Somebody who knows their situation. Someone who can tell them where they're going to end up in this process. I think it's helpful to add additional resources around housing counselors. But what we wanted to make sure is that a housing counselor would not be a barrier to the direct mediation that folks want. And while in this bill, folks will be encouraged to see a housing counselor. If they can't sit down with someone within 30 days, they can go direct to mediation. That's what my constituents have wanted. That's what Oregonians from around the state have wanted. And that is why this is a good bill. And in Senate Bill 1564, which provided protections in terms of people that we heard, many of us have stories of individuals who are in the foreclosure process when they thought they were in loan modification process. That will no longer take place. We want to make sure that people who are in the process of having their loan modified or where they think they are, that they cannot have their house sold out from under them. And we have accountability measures in this bill that will make sure that someone will have access to damages and attorney fees to make sure they have their day in court. This is an incredibly important bill for Oregonians. I don't want us to downplay that somehow we are making things more difficult. Because believe me, it has been difficult enough for folks out there, and they are demanding these simple provisions to be able to sit down with their lender. I think we should be proud of this bill. This bill is long overdue, and I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Holvey, do you wish to close?
Thank you. Just briefly, Mr. Speaker. Just to address a couple of points, perhaps, Mr. Speaker, I think a lot of good discussion we've heard on this particular bill. But colleagues, I do want to stress that we can point the finger a lot of different directions on why our economy's bad, that jobs would solve this problem. Certainly, people with jobs have better ability to pay for mortgages than those that don't. It's pretty common sense. But colleagues, I don't think we should forget, you know, why our economy is in the shape it's in. And is it really the fault of all homeowners who have found themselves underwater because they got into a subprime mortgage that had a prepayment penalty and an escalating interest rates that they couldn't get out of because they couldn't talk to a lender? I think Oregonians have been frustrated with this process. We've watched our economy go down over the last 4 years, and I think back of what the crisis was that caused this. It was a mortgage crisis. It was the practice, lending practice, of collateralizing loans and packaging them, selling them on Wall Street. There was no skin in the game left for the lenders. And that left borrowers with nobody to talk to. That's what this bill addresses. It addresses somebody to talk to about what to do. Maybe there isn't anything to do, like I previously said, but at least there's a chance to talk to somebody. It would be great if everybody could afford their payments, but as values continue to plummet because of the secondary market and loans being packaged, diced and sliced and sold, and nobody knows who owns what, the homeowner is at a huge disadvantage. That's why these concepts have come forward to us, is to help homeowners, to bring some sort of fairness back into the system. I think the results of this bill will help everybody concerned. It'll help the lending industry. It'll help the real estate markets. It'll help the homeowners. Sure, there will be some people that will go forward and end up in foreclosure. Certainly that's going to happen. But we will have some way to help even those folks. There was a piece of this bill that was taken out, a compromise, one that I didn't support, but still I'm very supportive of this bill. But it was about the Unlawful Trade Practices Act and giving the Attorney General authority under provisions of this bill. That's no longer in this bill. There is a private right of action for borrowers to go forward with, but usually those folks that are in foreclosure don't have a lot of money to pursue those sorts of avenues. But still, I support this bill. It's a great bill. If it were not for the Attorney General's ability under the Unlawful Trade Practices Act, this state wouldn't have millions of dollars to help Oregonians facing this crisis right now. So though I recognize that we can point the problem at jobs in the economy and what are we doing about that, it is worth remembering why our economy is in the shape it is in. This just didn't happen by chance in the housing industry, in the lending industry. It happened way back because of things that are out of the control of the borrower, deregulation under Glass-Steagall. Government failed the people by not keeping track of these markets. This is a small piece to take a step back and say we will control some parts of this and try to help regular Oregonians in this crisis. Colleagues, I think that this bill represents a huge win for Oregonians in the Oregon legislature. Once again, I think Oregonians' voices have been heard. And I applaud all of us that have worked to bring this bill to the shape that it's in on both sides of the aisle. It is time to pass this bill and get it back to the Senate so it can become law. Thank you. I urge an aye vote.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. Representative Lindsay, how do you vote? Lindsay votes no. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Gilliam votes no. Representative Freeman, how do you vote? Freeman votes no. Senate Bill 1552, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Chair requests unanimous consent to temporarily advance to the order of business of second reading of Senate bills. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Chair requests unanimous consent the rules be suspended and Senate Bill 5701, 5702, 1579, 1581, 1582 be read second time immediately. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Senate Bill 5701 relating to State Financial Administration appropriated money and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 5702 relating to State Financial Administration and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 1579 relating to State Financial Administration and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 1581 relating to education and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 1582 relating to Department of State Lands.
Bills read second time or passed to third reading. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended in Senate Bill 5701, 5702, 1579, 1581, and 1582 be read third time immediately. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Chair requests unanimous consent to temporarily advance to the order of third reading of Senate bills. The clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 5701 relating to State Financial Administration appropriated money and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 5701. Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, there comes in every session certain bills which rise above other bills because of their importance, their significance, the vision that they show for the future. These are defining bills. And this is a defining moment. We are addressing Senate Bill 5701. This is the budget reconciliation bill, which implements the co-chair's rebalance plan for the 2011-13 budget. After all the adjustments are made, the general fund remains at the ending balance remains at $115 million. We've taken no money from the rainy day fund. We've left almost $100 million in the e-board to deal with allotment problems and problems allocations that may occur during the next three, as a result of the next three forecasts. We have not raised any taxes. And yet, we came at the beginning of this session with a deficit of over $200 million. Now, it's not as high as it could have been, but $200 million for a state the size of Oregon is a huge deficit for us to have to deal with. And for us to deal with it in a bipartisan way, without having to strip the funds or raise taxes, put Band-Aids over a gushing wound, is, as the Senate President said, a miracle. But we're here because this is what the Constitution required for us to do, to come and to make sure that our budget stays in balance. To give you a brief summary, the actions include for education, the state school fund is increased by $2.5 million, which is related to the extension of the sunset on the small school district supplement fund for 1 year. Other major educational programs are funded at or near their 2011-13 legislatively adopted budget programs. In other words, we were able, for the most part, to hold education harmless. Regarding human services, over $100 million of general fund and $160 million of federal funds are added to the Department of Human Services. This funding is necessary for us to deal with increased caseload with the TANF program, Temporary Assistance to Needy Family, and the caseloads that are increasing. It also is useful in mitigating rate reductions for providers that serve seniors and people or individuals with physical and developmental disabilities. Funding for the Oregon Health Plan, alcohol and drug rehabilitation and treatment plans, and community mental health services are maintained at their current levels. In public safety, resources were added to assure that no violent criminals were released from prison, that no prisons are being shut down, that there will be no layoffs by the state police. Now, you may have heard, we're going to have to lay off 25 troopers or criminal division members, and then it went down to 12. Well, we understand that the state police department and the safety and the protection that they give our citizens was so important that we were able to come up with the funds necessary to maintain the troopers, both in patrol division and criminal division, without the cuts that we thought were going to have to be undertaken. On other programs, to accomplish all of this and to do it without raising taxes or stripping the reserves that we may need is something that it shows the level of expertise and assistance that we received as members of Ways and Means from the staff members in legislative fiscal office. These analysts, these experts, were able to come and work with us and help us to see our way through, this swamp of $200 million in deficit. We're very grateful to the members of legislative fiscal. We obviously couldn't do it without you, and we're, and sometimes I think they think that, we're lucky to do it with them. But working together and with the advice that they give and with the nonpartisan work of the co-chairs and You know, it is just truly amazing that we were able to come to this point. It is a defining moment. I'd like to express my gratitude for Co-Chair Buckley and for our Senate Co-Chair, the good Richard Devlin. I mean, you would have thought it may have been somewhat humorous down there, and at times it was. Sometimes it was tense, but in each instance, we continued to work through it, negotiating, continuing to come back to legislative fiscal, asking for more help and assistance for different ideas, and what we were able to come up with is Senate Bill 5701. I think the most important thing that I could say to you is that, you know, you have 24 members of the full Ways and Means Committee, okay, from the House and the Senate, both parties. They work hard to try and come up with the solutions necessary to keep our state budget in balance. This bill, Senate Bill 5701, had a vote in full Ways and Means. It was 24 votes in favor of this bill and zero in opposition. So on behalf of the full Ways and Means Committee, we just say to you that this is not perfect, but it's the best that we can come up with in a bipartisan manner under the constraints that we feel economically and fiscally, and we would ask for your sustaining vote on this Senate Bill 5701. Please vote aye.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Real quick, I want to thank the co-chairs from both parties for the excellent work on this bill. And I'd also like to thank my co-chair of the subcommittee from the Central Coast. As you might imagine, some of the decisions around the Human Service Program area were incredibly difficult, and we worked tirelessly on them, and I really appreciate your help. There is one little budget note in it, though. I want to make sure we get clear. So the budget note is directing the Oregon Health Authority to convene a stakeholder work group on the insurance premium tax. I became very familiar with that this last session as I was asked to help work on some of the solutions around it. And the intent of the budget note was not only to include all 8 health insurers that are involved in this, but also to include other stakeholders as well. And I think it's important that we make sure the work group fulfills the mission that the budget note asked for. Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I do urge an aye vote.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question to the carrier.
Question to the carrier. Does carrier yield?
Yes.
He does.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, and I appreciated your able description of this, but could you tell us, you told us several figures that were part of the reconciliation, but in total, just roughly, what would be the figure?
A lot. I want to be real specific. It's a tremendous amount. It, if you multiplied it by itself, would be billions.
Further question? Further discussion? Representative Richardson, do you wish to close?
Mr. Speaker, only to say that we have 6 subcommittees in Ways and Means. Each of them, you know, have the 3 subcommittee chairs, and then we have the, you know, the 3 co-chairs over the whole system. We could not have done this without the dedication for the 6 subcommittees to function as they're supposed to. The members of the subcommittees are supposed to be experts on the budgets in those subcommittees, so that we as co-chairs can call on them and ask for them, you know, to give us recommendations on important issues. And in each of the instances, they came through. And so we salute our subcommittee co-chairs and the members of the subcommittees, and thank you very, very much. We, again, recommend an aye vote for Senate Bill 5701.
Thank you, Representative. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Senate Bill 5701, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 5702 relating to State Financial Administration and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 5702. Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, forgive me if I lack the oratorical skills of the good representative from Southern Oregon, but I will do my best with the able assistance of the script from our good staff over here to explain Senate Bill 5702. Senate Bill 5702 adjusts the allocations and transfers of lottery funds in order to address the decline in the lottery forecast that has occurred since the 2011 session, finance debt service costs on lottery revenue bonds, and support the overall state budget reconciliation contained in Senate Bill 5701. Lottery resources are now forecast to be $35.6 million, or 3.1% below the level forecast when the legislature balanced the lottery budget last session. 5702 rebalances the lottery allocations to the new forecast level. The bill reduces lottery program allocations by $3,494,895 and uses the money so saved along with the lottery fund's ending balance to finance debt service on lottery revenue bonds and support the reconciliation of the state budget. Almost $3 million of program reductions represent a reduction in lottery support to the state school fund. In the budget reconciliation bill, which we just came to understand, the general fund for the state fund is increased to fully offset this reduction. Therefore, there is no reduction in state school support as a result of this action. Including the allocations required by the state constitution and not addressed in this bill, a total of $1.1 billion of lottery funds, a 7.7% reduction from the 2011 session, are allocated to support expenditures in the state budget, county government expenses, and deposits to the Education Stability Fund. The bill also reduces allocations from the criminal fine and assessment account, criminal fine account, by $873,897. Your Joint Ways and Means Committee recommends passage of Senate Bill 5702A.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Cowan, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gelzer, how do you vote? Gelzer votes aye. Senate Bill 5702, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 1579, relating to state financial administration and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 1579. Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, colleagues, Senate Bill 1579 helps implement the rebalanced state budget for the 2011-13 biennium. The bill clarifies application of statutes and modifies provisions relating to the use of funds, declares an emergency, and is effective on passage. Some key elements of the bill include: the bill extends the sunset provision for the Small Schools Fund until June 30th of 2013. It modifies the temporary assistance to needy families, the TANF program eligibility. It permits the judicial and legislative departments to retain unexpanded general fund balances. It transfers other fund balances from 11 accounts and subaccounts to the general fund to provide $102.4 million to help support the 2011-13 statewide rebalance. It ratifies fees for the Oregon Health Authority, the Oregon Health Licensing Office, and the Department of Veterans Affairs. It modifies the Oregon Local Disaster Assistance Loan Program to include grants. Pause while I scroll. It won't scroll for me. Close enough. To modify, it modifies the Oregon Local Disaster Assistance Loan Program to include grants and requires municipal and justice courts to report caseload and financial information to the legislative fiscal officer. Colleagues, the second to last item I read there about the Oregon Local Disaster Assistance Loan Program does concern much of the discussion around Vernonia and the issues that school district is facing, and that is something that we're trying to address with this program through the Oregon Local Disaster Assistance Loan Program. In addition, Mr. Speaker, colleagues, the Legislative Fiscal Office gave me a note that says the reason for Section 3 of Senate Bill 1579 is the Treasurer's decision to not issue lottery bonds in the fall of 2011. The Treasurer determined there were not enough projects to warrant a sale and therefore did not make fiscal sense to issue bonds at that time. While the Treasurer was being fiscally prudent, there was not any notification to the legislature that the sale was not going forward, and some members were curious where the proceeds were for certain projects in their districts. This section, Section 3, simply requires the Treasurer to notify the legislature if a sale does not occur for some reasons to try to avoid that situation from happening again. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you, colleagues. I urge your support for the bill.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Buckley, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, colleagues, I wish to express my appreciation to Co-Chair Richardson, Co-Chair Devlin, the subcommittee co-chairs, all the members of Ways and Means, and to the patience of all concerned as we work through the complexity of this rebalance. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Again, I urge support of this bill.
Thank you, Representative. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Senate Bill 1579, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 1581, relating to education and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 1581. Representative Comp.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Senate Bill 1581 requires public education entities to enter into achievement compacts with the Oregon Education Investment Board. Further, the bill identifies the education positions under the direction and the control of the Chief Education Officer. The full Ways and Means recommends passage of Senate Bill 1581.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I know how this vote is going to come out, but I want to remind us all, you can't fatten a lamb just by weighing it. While this bill clarifies and expands the role of the Oregon Education Investment Board, there's nothing in it that expands Oregon's investment in its K-12 public schools. There's nothing in this bill to bring arts, music, and foreign language back into schools that used to have them and don't anymore. There's nothing in this bill to bring school nurses and counselors back to students who desperately need them in order to get a good education. There's nothing in this bill to introduce new technology to our students. There's nothing to help start our kindergartners out with inspiration and a love of learning. And there is nothing to give our seniors the preparation they need for work or college. I know that this is the step that this session, this legislature, has chosen to take. But our work, really your work, does not end with this bill. It's not complete. It isn't complete until we do what we need to do to make sure that every Oregon student has a chance to succeed, develops a lifelong love of learning, and becomes a full contributing citizen of this state. I wish you well in that work. Get on it.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Representative Hunt.
To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
colleagues, I've found as I look at bills, sometimes they're really easy. You know, sometimes they're, as I look at them, and if I were to assign a grade to bills, there's those bills that are A's and are easy votes, and there's those bills that are F's and that are easy votes. As I look at this one, though, I really, the conclusion I've come to after talking to a lot of parents and teachers and administrators is that this bill, from my perspective, just gets incomplete. And it's really for a lot of the reasons that the good representative from Southwest Portland just mentioned. If you look at the two fundamental things we need, from my perspective, in education in Oregon, one, some of the restructuring components that are in this bill, some of the accountability components in this bill, some of the achievement goals that are in this bill. But then, on the other hand, the investment component to reach those goals and to comply with the requirements and the compacts in this bill. This bill has a lot of the first and has none of the second. And if my son or my daughter were to turn in half of the work for a class, their teachers, I hope, would give them an incomplete, would not grade them as having passed the class. As I look at this bill, from my perspective, it gets an incomplete, and for that reason, I'll have to vote no.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, in our last session, we passed Senate Bill 909, which put into place the broad outline for a seamless P20 education system that begins to dismantle the silos of self-interest that have existed for far too long. It also put us on a path to creating a public education system that creates expectations of academic performance and moves Oregon from being a state that simply funds education to being a state that invests in public education. Senate Bill 1581 is one of the next steps in this reform process. The primary academic contribution of this piece of legislation is calling for the creation of achievement compacts between each school district, each community college, and each public university within our state and the Oregon Education Investment Board. I believe this bill will usher in an era of greater accountability along with greater flexibility at all levels of our public education system. This is an opportunity for education advancement that we must take at this point in time. But we need to keep in mind where the work will be done that these achievement compacts will bring to pass. And that work is going to be done at the local level. It's going to be school boards. It's going to be superintendents. It's going to be teaching staffs. All of these components are going to be involved in and called to provide greater responsibility and greater involvement than they have ever had in the past. And we also need to do all we can provide the tools that they are going to need to manage their districts efficiently to help them reach the goals of their achievement compacts. I'm gratified that we will be making some progress to ensure that our educator evaluation systems will be strengthened so that we can make sure that our students have access to the professional development, that their instructors have access to the professional development they will need to ensure that all of our students have the benefit of highly qualified instructors. I look forward to being able to provide additional tools for these resources for these folks at local level next session. Colleagues, this bill is not the end, but I believe it is a means to a better end for all of Oregon's public education system and for all of our students. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion, Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Mike Hawketh heard my passion a few days ago about this bill, and I wanted to share a little bit on the floor today. You know, I had the amazing opportunity to work in a school system that gave me the opportunity to work with teachers to provide education for kids in Oregon, and in particular in Coos Bay. And I come to you with a real sense of urgency. We are at a turning point in our society, in our country. You know, are we going to be better off or not in the future? To me, this is a bill that starts us on the road to making sure that every Oregonian teacher and school board member and student and parent understand the urgency. We need to make schools that compete with every other school in the world, not in America, not in Oregon, in the world, for our kids to have the kind of opportunities that we had in our lives. And it has always been the public education system in our country that has provided that opportunity for each and every one of our previous generations to outproduce the rest of the world. I will tell you that I worked with amazing teachers, and they are all over the state. As professionals, they put in more time outside of the classroom than maybe any other professional. And those who have been on school boards know that as well. We are beginning an opportunity to make compacts, and I think it's a compact that goes both ways. And it needs every one of us who are in this institution here and in the institutions that provide education to work together and transform our school settings so that we produce the next generation of entrepreneurs, critical thinkers, and having compacts that share the responsibility between teachers and school boards and get people in the room talking about how do we make every classroom the best classroom it can be. It takes all of us to commit to that. I thank my colleagues from around in this chamber for putting in and leaving an issue that was a bit divisive, but for me has always been the call to every community that we do have to invest in our education. The QEM is kind of the model that we developed a number of years ago, and maybe we need to keep working to make it better. But the reality is, it sets bars for us that say, this is what the best practices say we need to spend to get where we want to go. When I was a principal, I challenged my teachers to not worry about that. We have what we have. And shouldn't we outperform whatever any model said? I still believe that. And our teachers did that because they were willing to put in the time and the effort and to work with kids and families to make it happen. But I tell the people around the state, parents and grandparents and people who don't have children, that if we don't get started today in transforming our system so that every one of our children have the new skills they need in IT, in collaboration, we will not have a chance to continue to compete. So I urge your eye support for this bill. Let's get on and understand the urgency necessary to move our education system in the state of Oregon to be one of the very best in the world. And let's not stop until we get there. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Jefferson Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I admire the work of the governor and of the members of this chamber and of the advocates who worked on this bill and to reach a tremendous amount of consensus. I am glad that business and school reformers and teachers associations have come together, and I am glad that we are willing to rethink education. So much of our policy discussion, particularly outside this chamber, hovers around power concerns, who pays the freight, and who wields the votes. Luckily, most of the power around this bill is aligned, so we are left to the policy. I thought I would be here for many discussions on how we might reform and how we might think about education. I now recognize this looks like my last chance. So three major thoughts. Not to the press or even to the record, but to the members who I admire deeply who will be here after this session. First, how might we think about improving performance as related to pay? I offer this with some humility. The only thing I think I am sure about education policy is that too many non-experts purport to be experts at election time. There's a notable set of studies on pay and performance. I will go through extraordinarily briefly,
for work that requires a high level of cognitive activity, a low level of pay equals lower performance, same as work that requires a lower level of cognitive activity. And as you increase pay for lower cognitive activity work, performance increases. That's also true for higher cognitive activity until you get to a higher rate of pay when you actually look to really give bonuses for and high-level bonuses for highly cognitive work, and performance can go down. It's counterintuitive. But what actually increases performance for higher cognitive behavior? Autonomy, mastery, and purpose. And so I want to say to my fellow members who came to this chamber wanting to work on education, not only funding, but also policy, is that I want to offer my strong hunch that our education policy efforts regarding teachers will be successful to the degree they improve autonomy, mastery, and purpose. Second, what should we measure? Again, the overarching point is I want to be humble here. But I have real doubt about using tests as a primary measure. Not because I didn't do well at them. Had I not done well at them, had we not had standardized tests, I might still think I was stupid. But I have real doubt about using a measurement tool to measure the performance of someone when that tool is measuring something they don't control. So I want us to consider, and I want to, for this at least, speak to the record, that we consider, yes, maybe 360-degree evaluations from fellow teachers. Does he or she share and offer ideas for effective teaching? Is she or he open, even eager, to receive and try new ideas? From students, does the teacher care about you as a person and care about your learning? From administrators, does he or she seek and accept help in becoming better? From parents, when you meet with a teacher, does she or he know and show knowledge about an interest in your child? Things that teachers can control, not things that they will do if they are given students more likely to be in a richer district, less likely to be in mine. And finally, funding. My senior year in high school, Measure 5 passed. I would purport that is a major reason why there are several members of my generation working on public service now. And in the 20 years since, we have passed multiple rounds of education reforms. I hope this is the best round. But I have a nagging doubt that none will impact student results, student lives, students' learning, unless we pay for what we know works. The things I'm pretty confident work include better summers, include early education, include music and art, include manageable class size, and these things aren't free. I applaud much of the motive behind the Oregon Education Investment Board. I want to urge in future sessions investment.
Further discussion, Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I don't care much for this bill, and I'm going to tell you why. First and foremost, I think it's a little Orwellian to have a board with quasi-governmental powers, with investment in its name, without seeming to have a mission or charge to promote meaningful investment in educational excellence. Now, that would have to include a plan to increase resources. Secondly, and this should have been first, some of the most vehement proponents of this plan, vague as it is, have employed the language of force, threats, and coercion, which is not the language of education. Simon Legree was not an educator. You can look that one up too. Third, I have seen a lot of this before. 20 years ago, this building passed the Education Act for the 21st Century, another set of sweeping mandates that seemed to be based on good intentions, and that use many of the same foils as props, dropouts, poor children, children of color, at-risk kids. The need for alternative pathways as well as equal opportunity. In fact, the good parts of it fell victim to relentless budget cutting, and we saw our curriculum development resources diverted into compliance. For anyone working in the education field, it felt like a nefarious plot. create conditions of extreme scarcity and stress that make it increasingly hard, if not impossible, to carry out the mission, and then you blame the educators for the ensuing shortcomings. My basic problem with this bill continues to be the lack of depth and the discussion of outcomes, which seems to be a concept central to the whole idea. What outcomes are we talking about? Specifically, I have to insist that test scores are not outcomes. What will members of the current generation of school children be doing when they reach their 20s and 30s? I'm not just talking about what they will do to earn a living, although that's important. I'm also talking about how they will participate as citizens. How will they raise their own children? How will they process the information bombarding them in order to make decisions in our democracy? Will they be literate enough in the skepticism and the urge to verify what characterizes science to avoid manipulation by junk science and snake oil salesmen? Will they be literate enough in math to avoid manipulation by bogus statistics? Will they be literate enough in history to appreciate the lessons our society has already learned? Will they be able to follow a logical argument, and will they be able to make one? Will they have the capacity to appreciate the many wonderful things created by human minds, hearts, and hands? Will the wisdom of the ages inform their lives? Now, these are some of the questions that trouble me. And that's how you plan for outcomes. And then, as I've said before, you do not actually plan or budget for outcomes unless you connect them to inputs. And no, so-called compacts are not inputs. This is about governance, not pedagogy. Folks, this strikes me as more dithering, more avoidance of the real issues. The system is grievously under-resourced. There is no magic that will change that. Even if the OEB plan could be seen as necessary for improving the system, by no stretch of the imagination is it sufficient. Is it the most important thing to do at this time? My problem is, I doubt it. Colleagues, this is not how the best education systems in the world operate, and our future deserves the best in the world, not serial, poorly planned experimentation. We can do better. But I've got to say, in the end, I will probably be a reluctant aye vote because I'm ever the optimist. I hope to be able to influence how we proceed after the passage of this bill. Because again, I think, frankly, we can and we must do better. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
To the bill. Many of the concerns that have been expressed on the floor today are familiar to me because I've been in discussion with many of you about those things, with many of our constituents about those things, and I too have wrestled with whether or not this is the right thing to do at this time and what it will really do for our students. And I want to talk to you for a minute about what I hope this is not about. Bringing our community stakeholders together and saying that we are collectively going to focus on making our schools better does not mean and should not mean that our public schools are broken. Because I can tell you, our public schools are not broken. For the majority of our kids, our public schools are doing not just a good job, but a very good job. The problem that we are trying to address is that for an important segment of our kids, we haven't yet figured out how to best meet their needs and move these students forward. We haven't yet been able to figure out how best to support the excellent staff that are working hard next to these students every day so that they can push them forward to success. I don't believe, colleagues, that we will ever be able to say that our public schools are perfect. The day that we say that the public schools are perfect, we have failed in our job because we've stopped imagining what it is that we can do more. I hope that every day we are dreaming what we can do more for every student. And colleagues, that is one of the things that I like about the direction that this bill and the discussion around it is taking us. We are no longer talking about cut scores and terminal points, that you reach this point in the third grade and we put a little mark on you and say, you're there, you're done.
We are talking about moving to a system that looks at all students, those that move at the head of their class and those that lag behind, and looking at how much progress they are making and rewarding those students and those teachers for learning, because that's what school is about. It's learning. We get to have a lot of experience in my household with public schools because we are lucky enough to have four children who attend the very fine public schools in Corvallis. Our four kids are very different, and they probably fall along that spectrum of kids in terms of how well each of their needs are met. My daughter Nicole is sitting here with me tonight, which is really lucky for me. And as soon as she got to the seat, she let me know that she got 34 out of 40 points today on her science test, which she told me is the best score that I've ever gotten on my science test yet. I am so proud of that, and I am so proud of you, Nicole, for getting that test. But what I love about where we are talking about going with these achievement compacts and with looking at a growth model for testing is we're going to look at every kid and say, where were you before and where are you now? And let's not look at where you are compared to everybody else in the world. Let's look at where are you compared to yourself? Where are you compared to where you have been? And we're going to go back to those teachers and we're going to evaluate them and say, congratulations, because look how far you've moved these kids. Look how far you've moved your kids that we label talented and gifted. Look how far you've moved your kids that we call disabled. Look how far you've moved those kids that don't really exist, but that we call your typical average kid, because there is no such thing as a typical average kid. Every day in our schools, in every single public school in this state, we have teachers, we have students that are working side by side, and they are making progress every single day. Are all of those kids meeting a benchmark? They are not, and we have to work on that. But we cannot get bogged down in thinking about only those kids that aren't getting there. We have to look at how do we do better for them and how do we celebrate all of the things that we are doing right. And all of these things our teachers and students are doing well. And these achievement compacts are going to help us do that. Because instead of saying, we're going to tell you based on a score why you're wrong and we're going to punish you, we're going to look at promising practices in other public schools across the state and figure out how can we learn from other public school teachers? How can we learn from other public school principals? How can we learn from other public school superintendents? How can we learn from other Oregon kids about how to do this right, not just for the gifted kids, not just for the kids with disabilities, but for every single kid across the spectrum who we are going to promise this year you're going to do better than you did last year, and next year you're going to do better than you did this year. And we are going to celebrate you no matter what that Oak score tells you you are, because you have learned. The other thing that these achievement compacts are going to do is help us understand when we haven't met that mark. And I realize
Representative Tomei yields.
Thank you, good representative. Colleagues, quickly to the issue of governance. We are going to be putting in front of our school boards the ability to look at where students have been and where we need to do better, who we need to focus on. And this was best explained to me by a local school board member just a few nights ago that got me to a yes on this bill. Today, school boards get those scores at the end of a school year. They receive them in a report. Now, at the beginning of the planning process, local school board members and communities are going to see where they as school districts need to grow. So just like students, they can move forward, they can learn, and they can grow. And they're going to build their budgets around that. And they're going to talk about that. And they're going to talk about how they need to adjust their policy. And that is going to help us take our good public schools in Oregon and make them even better. Colleagues, I urge your aye vote, and I thank you for your indulgence. This is important work, and I hope we keep at it and keep asking the difficult questions, because our work is never going to be done on this. Our kids are always going to need us to be demanding and pushing for more and better for them, just as they are going to do more and better for us in the next generation. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you. And colleagues, I congratulate the daughter of the good representative from Corvallis and Philomath. I'm glad my mother never publicly stated my scores, but congratulations. This bill caused me a great deal of anxiety, like many of you. It consumed a great deal of my time. Luckily, I didn't have two priority bills last longer than the first 2 days, so I had the time to spend to get comfortable with this concept. But what really concerned me was the achievement compact and the idea about measuring kids with the same stick no matter where they're at. And so a lot of anxiety circulated on this issue. It would have been easy just to lock down and say no at that point and just be done with this conversation. But as we do, we try to find our way to yes, we've got an issue and it's important and we want to try to find out just what exactly this piece of legislation does. So you read the bill. And in the bill, I started learning more about what this achievement compact did and what it meant and what it was comprised of. What concerned me was when I got to page 7 and started talking about open communication, that it shall ensure that open communication provided the parents, students, teachers. That was a concern until I got to page 8. Then it actually talked about how they would appoint the members of the Achievement Compact Advisory Committee. Shall consist of teachers, administrators, other appropriate education personnel employed by the district, and others. So now we've got a governing board that I can support. And the biggest thing is this governing board gets to determine based on their available resources where their marks are going to be made. That's really important to me. In the past, as a police officer, I taught the DARE program. That does not make me a teacher. Let me just say to all the teachers out there, thank you. Bonnie Collada, teacher, greatest teacher I ever had in my life. Just being a DARE officer didn't make me a teacher, but it made me appreciate what it's like to be in a classroom with kids, fifth grade kids, teaching 17-week curriculum in 8 different grade schools. Each school was inherently different. Each class had its own dynamic. Each child is different. It's different teaching in 24, a student at 24 versus those at 34, 35. My daughter just this morning had a presentation on how to make a duct tape wallet at her school, Hogan Cedars Elementary. She asked if I would help her make some copies because she wanted to pass that out as part of her presentation. She's going for extra credit. I can appreciate that. She said, Daddy, will you make 37? And I stopped and I said, 37? You've got 37 kids in your class? She goes, no, I got 36. Silly, teacher's 37. I want to give her one too. 37. 37, 36 fifth grade students in a classroom. 32 first grade students in my other daughter's classroom. And we're going to measure these students and find out their success. Okay, but we get to set the standard. And we get to set that based on growth. We get to encourage that. And we're going to do that with our teachers, with our groups, with our educators, within the district. So I get kind of comfortable on that. I will say that I think the anxiety in my district comes from the fact that we are currently struggling in the Gresham-Barlow School District. We're struggling to get to an agreement through collective bargaining. I'm not going to get involved in the middle of this thing. I just want to say that the anxiety surrounds a 23-page proposal, none of which, I think it's important to notice, has anything to do with dollars. It's about security and safety in a classroom for these teachers. These educators have some ideas about how to accomplish that. We're at impasse, more than likely going to strike. So the anxiety is there. Now, I could choose to be popular on this issue. I've got a bunch of Facebook friends out there, not entities, not associations, not memberships, not corporations. People, friends, personal friends that know me by name that we call and talk to that would actually like me to vote no on this issue. I don't necessarily think they've all read the bill, but they're scared of the bill because they're scared of the world that we're going to measure these students without giving them any additional resource to be better. I'm concerned about that too. But here's the other thing I'm concerned about. If not this, then what? We should find a starting point. This is not perfect. I agree with the good representative of Clackamas. This is probably an incomplete. But it's enough to get started. And I'm comfortable enough to get started today to say I don't want to fall further behind. I don't want to do nothing. And I'd like to do something today. Choosing action over inaction, if you will pardon the phrase that I've heard from a great leader in this chamber. So today we choose action. I do anyway, and I encourage you to do the same thing. This is and represents our best chance to get away and get a waiver from the No Child Left Behind, but let's be clear. It's not guaranteed. That won't be necessary, my Trout Dalian friend. But I would encourage you to support the bill. I appreciate you listening. I know the hours are long. And again, it's action over inaction. I'm choosing to vote aye today. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I think probably everything that can be said about this bill has already been said, but not by everybody. And as a consequence, I rise to put my 2 cents worth in. Like the good representative from the soul of Portland, I'm not a fan at all of this bill. I'm not a fan of in vogue type of education reform. A little earlier, I was reading here, or looking at, and I've kept this on my desk for years, it's the Korean War, FEEF, Far Eastern Air Force, the air war in Korea. And that happens to be a time in, you know, that was fairly important to me. And then I looked at it and realized that was 62 years ago. And a lot of things have happened in 62 years. The same thing is true as far as education is concerned. A lot of things have happened. But the changes began long before 62 years ago. Education has been the whipping child of every politician, from the President of the United States down to those honorable people who are state representatives from not so famous states as even we have here in the state of Oregon. You can look back over the course of your history and see all of the changes that have been proposed. The biggest thing that happens out of that is you stress your teachers out because they've got new things to learn in order to be able to do the job that they'd already been doing. I'll stop with that. I'll probably vote for this legislation, but I ask you to be cautious. Be cautious about how you go around modifying, changing, revolutionizing, call it whatever you want to, education in America. It hasn't been terribly successful so far. No, it hasn't. And we've had some very, very bright presidents who have come up with, on both sides of the aisle too, you understand. A fellow named Reagan had a big education reform, and then there was a guy before him, Kennedy, that had big education reforms. So it's not peculiar. It's a nonpartisan sort of thing. Anybody who wants to, get elected and make a big name for themselves, revolutionize education, and we can do it with that. At any rate, be careful. Please, colleagues, when you go to changing something as delicate and as important, please note, as important as education is.
Further discussion, Representative Girard.
Mr. Speaker, I move the previous question.
Representative Girard, seeing no one else in the pending queue, Representative Comp, do you wish to close?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. Senate Bill 1581 gives a voice back to our local parents, our communities, teachers, and school boards for their students by designing achievement outcomes rather than conforming to the federal mandates of No Child Left Behind. Too many of our children and students have left behind. Colleagues, I encourage your aye vote.
Thank you, Representative. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Holvey, how do you vote? Holvey votes aye. Representative Brewer, how do you vote? Brewer votes aye. Representative Lindsay, how do you vote? Lindsay votes aye. Senate Bill 1581, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 1582 relating to the Department of State Lands.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 1582. Representative Greg Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I think this is the last bill but for the sign you die resolution. Senate Bill 1582B establishes a process for a person to request an independent review of a determination made by the Department of State Lands that wetlands are present on a land parcel owned by that person. One reviewer will be selected by the department, one by the requester, and the third will be selected by the other two reviewers. Colleagues, the Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends that Senate Bill 1582B be passed. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Representative Wingard.
To the bill.
To the bill.
Just briefly, colleagues, I'd like to acknowledge the difficult choices we've had to make for the people, for all Oregonians. Irregardless how we may feel about this bill, the staff on the sidebars have helped raise the bar for our work, and I hope that we can just close this session out, pass this bill and close the session out. I urge an aye vote.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Smith does not wish to close. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. Clerk will open the voting system. Representative Johnson votes aye. Representative Cameron, how do you vote? Cameron votes aye. Representative Johnson was aye. Johnson was off. Representative Widener, how do you vote? Widener votes aye. Representative Johnson, it was ruled that you were off the floor. Senate Bill 1582, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Representative Roblin, for what purpose are you in the queue?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Point of personal privilege.
Please proceed.
Yesterday, last Friday, when I was the speaker at the dais, we had a situation that occurred, and I said that I would investigate and take action. I did investigate, talked to a number of people, and did conclude that the member from Southwestern Oregon did, in fact, shout out a comment during the session. I did not hear that comment, but I've talked to members who did. It is inappropriate, and you heard from our speaker today go over the rules explaining that you cannot shout out. I felt bad about that whole situation personally, just because I think the decorum of our body is really, really important. And I wanted to make sure that I acknowledge that and that I want to personally apologize to Representative Tomei for not having had the opportunity to take that, and that's why I'm doing this today. So thank you for the opportunity, sir.
Thank you very much. Representative Kotek.
Mr. Speaker, I have several individuals who would like to change their vote. I move the rules be suspended and Representative Freeman be allowed to change his vote on Senate Bill 1552B. It will not change the outcome.
Representative Kotek moves the rules be suspended and that Representative Freeman be allowed to change his vote on Senate Bill 1552. It will not change the outcome. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Freeman, how do you vote?
Aye.
Freeman votes aye. Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the rules be suspended and that Representative Gilliam be allowed to change his vote on Senate Bill 1552B. It will not change the outcome.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Kotek moves the rules be suspended and that Representative Gilliam be allowed to change his vote on Senate Bill 1552. It will not change the outcome. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so order. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote?
Aye.
Gilliam votes aye. Representative Kotek?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the rules be suspended and that Representative Lindsay be allowed to change his vote on Senate Bill 1552. It will not change the outcome.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Kotek moves the rules be suspended and that Representative Lindsay be allowed to change his vote on Senate Bill 1552. It will not change the outcome. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Lindsay, how do you vote?
Aye.
Representative Lindsay votes aye. Colleagues, I just want to make a quick announcement. As you leave the floor today, please leave your voting key in place. Don't put it away. Leave it in the key slot. Messages from the Senate?
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you that he has signed House Bill 4056, 4058, 4077, 4084, 4093, 4172. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform the Senate has passed House Bill 5201, 5202. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you the Senate has adopted SCR 211.
Chair requests unanimous consent to return to the order of first readings, memorials, and resolutions. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
SCR 211, adjourning sine die 2012 regular session of the 76th Legislative Assembly.
Chair requests unanimous consent. The rules be suspended and SCR 211 be considered immediately. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Clerk will read the resolution.
SCR 211, be it resolved by the Legislative Assembly of the State of Oregon that the 2012 regular session of the Senate and the House of Representatives of the 76th Legislative Assembly is adjourned sine die.
Question now arises upon final reading and adoption of SCR 211. Those of the opinion that the resolution should pass will vote aye, and those opposed no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Widener, how do you vote?
Aye.
Widener votes aye. Representative Tomei, how do you vote? Tomei votes aye. Representative Jefferson Smith, how do you vote? He votes aye.
We're kind of together. This is the same size as we ran last time.
Is it?
Yeah, I think it is. There he is, through there. Okay, here, grab it.
The 2012 regular session of the 76th Legislative Assembly is hereby adjourned, sine die. I hope they saw that.
They did that.
Yeah, they're cheering.
Yeah.
Thank you. Drive careful.